Listening to KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Radio with Mike Honig and Agnetha Willis here on 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston. Today I've got a special guest who happened to be in the building anyway and decided to stay over. Peter Hughes, one of the hosts of Technology Bites. We might talk technology because it's up to Egberto to do politics right on Monday nights. I only do politics okay and occasionally not at all.
And I just do them. I'll do them randomly and sitting in here.
Yeah, you do random stuff. So you're gonna chit chat and contradict me and make me backpedal and stuff like that.
Probably not that. I would think maybe people who've stuck around from Technology Bites can play. Guess what Peter's politics are?
That'll lose you, listeners.
I don't know that.
No, well, you know, I think Jay Leno, among others, has said that the reason, and not that I'm kind of tired of Jay Leno, Leno'd out, but, you know, he makes a good point, and other performers have made the point, that if you start to take political sides, you're going to lose half your audience, either way. And congratulations, you've now been un-Leno'd.
So now there'll be four listeners to our show instead of eight.
Yeah. Boy, that's going to make it tough come fundraising time. Okay, we have open forum tonight. 713-526-5738 is the phone number. 713-526-KPFT. Because it's open forum, you don't have to talk about anything I suggest. However, that does tend to be the way it works. But you're not obligated. Okay, first of all, little things. I sometimes think about what I may call our future disabled Americans. You know, there's actually an article based on a report from the World Health Organization about the dangers of headphones because of the volume at which people listen to them, so that by the time some young people are in their 30s or early 40s, they're already losing significant portions of their hearing range.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that's occurred to me, and I haven't heard anyone discuss it yet, but I think it's worth considering, the number of kids and young people that wear backpacks. And these are not like hiking backpacks, right, where you get a little extra support from your hips so you're not weighing down your spine. We're talking about putting all the weight on your shoulders, having to lean forward to counterbalance it. I was a window covering installer for 20 years. I wore a tool belt with suspenders. That was a 35-pound tool belt. And I did that to take some of the pressure off my hips because of the hip damage I was doing. And I have a little curvature of the spine now and, you know, some other issues. I've got some compressed discs. That's a 35-pound pack. Now, tell me that that's heavier than what a lot of these kids are carrying around.
No. My experience, I have a number of kids, and the most recently
you have a number of kids.
Four, I have four kids.
Oh, so the population explosion is partly actually in this country. You're helping to sustain the white population in this country.
Yeah,
I just knew you were about to say that. I was about to say, time out. Don't say it. Don't say it.
Yeah, no, I'm not a Buchananite. I don't feel some sort of need to, like, you know, basically my wife, she wanted to have four kids, and so we had four kids. It's kind of
so. Now I have to hark back to last week's discussion with Barry, and his Miss Trixie. Apparently, I'm going to need a mascot now on this show called Miss Trixie, because apparently that was a very popular referral that we kept going back to for the purposes of that discussion.
Well, my youngest in particular, and I think this ties into the state of our state education funding, they had backpacks, no lockers. So every book, everything for the entire day was in their backpack. I mean, it was bad enough back in the day when you were just carrying your homework or, you know, whatever things that you really needed to have with you in a backpack, but now it's textbooks and notebooks and binders, and they would have multiple binders, and it probably came in around 35 pounds. And you're talking children who are not even adolescents yet.
Kids that you probably wouldn't allow them to throw a fastball because it might damage growing ligaments and bones, and yet they're hauling around this stuff on their young, relatively fragile growing spines. So that by the time they're 30, they've already got some curvature, they've already got some compression, they've already got maybe some disc bulges, and it doesn't get better as you get older. I mean, I've heard this story, you're not getting older, you're getting better. I'm going to whisper to you, it's a lie. It's a lie. You get wiser. You don't necessarily get smarter, because smart, I think, is native. But you do get wiser, which I think is only the only real compensation to age.
Yeah, I used to think, you know, the time machine by H.G. Wells, you know, the guy goes to the future and all that, the Morlocks and the Eloy. The Morlocks are kind of trollish little, you know, live underground and all that. We seem to be trying to make that. It seems like there's sort of an effort afoot to, you know, because that was sci-fi. I'm thinking, you know, it was Victorian sci-fi even.
Today it would be steampunk.
Couldn't be possible. You know, that's not going to happen. And then you start looking at it and go, well, you know what?
Well, you know,
Idiocracy, we're probably getting close.
You know, Idiocracy, I have to say, I recommend anyone who has never seen Idiocracy should watch it. It's not a great movie, it's got a great concept.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the acting is sophomoric and some of the dialogue. Of course, I guess that's the point. It's Idiocracy.
Yes.
But the concept, you know, the interviews that they have where you have the really intelligent parents saying, I just don't know if I want to bring a child into this world. So maybe we'll have one. And the point is that the really stupid people breed like rabbits because they don't overthink the process. It's really a very interesting movie. And by the way, I just want to remind, open forum, you can call 713-526-5738 if you don't want to hear me and Peter talk the whole night. We do have Gary on the line. I'm just going to hold on. I'm just going to say one thing very quickly. Along the lines of Idiocracy, you know, there is sometimes discussion about whether humans are still evolving or has modern technology stopped the evolution process. And I think people who ask that question either don't fundamentally understand evolution or haven't thought about evolution in terms of humans. Humans will always be evolving.
Right.
They'll be getting, quote, better. They'll be getting, quote, worse. For example, you could argue that the kinds of medical procedures that we have now for children that used to die young, who now get artificially corrected in some sense, who then get old enough to reproduce, who then pass on their genetic deficiencies to another generation, and that then begins to disperse through the population. On the one hand, you could say that's a bad thing. On the other hand, I have kind of suspected, and I guess I won't be alive when we find out, that if you want to prolong human lifespan, ultimately the best way to do that may very well be to have children later in life.
Right.
Because if you think about it, evolution is about the ability to reproduce. You have to live long enough to reproduce. After that, nature doesn't care what happens to you. That's why cancer tends to strike after childbearing years in most cases. So if you only have people reproducing, or if you have large numbers of people reproducing late in their reproductive years, then nature will find that that is a survival trait. If you want to be able to reproduce, the ones that survive will be the ones that reproduce late. I don't think I'm explaining that right, but I think you get the drift.
That makes sense. It's because clearly, you know, once you reproduce, then your contribution to the next generation from a genetic standpoint is over.
I guess a simpler way to put it is that the fact that you were able to reproduce later in life means that your life has more value biologically for a longer period of time. I guess that's one simpler way of phrasing it. Okay, so now I've got a couple of people on the line. We have open lines, 713-526-5738. Gary, you're first up. Thank you for being patient. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I have a question for your guest.
Oh, so now I have a guest. I'm redundant.
Okay, well,
it's a spyware question.
Or it's a spyware question.
Well, no. Actually, I listened to the Geek Show, and I appreciate your guest. He said he made a joke about, which is common knowledge, that if you say anything in public, 50% of the people will agree and 50% will disagree.
Actually, that was my joke.
Okay. Well,
just saying.
Well, I have a philosophical question.
Mm-hmm.
In this world, you know, it seems that it's true that 50-50, and I was wondering if you have any insights as to why this was true. Is this biological? Is it evolutionary? Is it sociological? Is it political? Why are we always divided? I don't understand. Is it maybe religion and the lack thereof, or is it because, you know, we live in the country or we live in the city? Why are we always divided? Is this basic evolutionary tribalism, or what?
You have to finish the question, Gary, before we can answer. Okay, Peter, he directed that to you. You get first shot.
Wow, there's a couple things. I mean, I've seen some of the stuff I've seen is that there clearly there are studies, and if you think back on the savannah or whatever, way back when humans didn't, when we were still dinner for half the animals running around out there, when you ran into somebody else, presumably there was always that risk. Was this a friend or foe? And that it makes sense that people, a survival thing would be if they look like you, then you're more inclined to negotiate the interaction. And if they don't look like you, then the stranger, different, bad, whatever, way back. And it seems like a lot of that carries forward. I mean, there's the studies with babies where they tend to identify with the people that they're surrounded with, you know, where they do the studies. Where they certainly make a distinction between people who don't look like their parents or who don't look like, you know, who don't resemble them in hair color, skin color, those kinds of things. So I think from an animal type level, there's some of those differences starts at that basic level. And if your mind doesn't take over past the, you know, reptile brain, that you start from a point of kind of being inclined to like people who are like you and dislike people who are not like you, whether it's by appearance or by philosophy.
Actually, Gary asked about why we seem to be divided 50-50, but starting with your premise, actually, we would be much more factionalized than 50-50, because arguably every familial group or tribal group would then be in opposition, which used to be, in fact, the case. Yeah. Is, in fact, the case.
Well, wait a minute. Now, I have a question. You're talking.
It has to be shorter than the last one, Gary.
Wait. You're discussing the reality of evolution and how we evolved to be 50-50, but we live in the 21st century, and we live in the United States. And we all grew up with Andy Griffith and Lucy, and we all have the same mores and and folkways, and we all live together in the same country with the same economy. Why are we split? Like, why is Ted? Why is there Ted Cruz, and why is there McGovern? I don't understand why we are so divided in this country when we all have the same exact values, beliefs, constitution, and reality.
Well, I would start with this. Young animals, of which humans are one, young animals imprint very early. And I think one of the best arguments for social and ethnic integration is when you talk about tribalism, you need to get an imprint very early of who and what is included in your tribe. So your tribe doesn't have to be all white. Your tribe is what you get imprinted with as safe and friendly at a time when you're young enough to imprint. So I think, hold on, Egberto has a little comment to make.
This is a real short one, and that is simply the divide that we have in the United States is a fictionalized divide created by bad and misinformation by a plutocracy that is actually trying to control us. Remember that it's not really a divide. We are not divided.
Well, I think you have to start with, and I think Gary is sort of correct and Peter is correct. I think that we start having a very constrained notion of who is us. And it takes training and it takes exposure to enlarge our vision, our intuitive vision of who is part of us. Now, if you think about it, what has happened in this country due to politics is we don't necessarily divide along ethnic lines anymore. So in a sense, we've become integrated. Yay. Even gangs now are sometimes integrated. That's how far we've come. Multi-ethnic gangs. But we get to be socially and culturally divided. Gary, I'm going to have to let you go. I've got,
I just want to say one thing. What you just confirmed, which I disbelieve, is that Karl Marx was right.
Okay.
Think about that.
Wow,
no,
that
don't dismiss me.
Never read the book, so I can't argue one way or the other. However, I think
he's saying that capitalism is what causes this disparity, and your guest is saying it's evolution that causes this disparity. But this disparity makes no sense in our contemporary world with space stations and lunar landings and the reality of our middle class. So there's definitely something awry here,
I don't believe
in conspiracy theories.
We'll have to talk about
Thank
the dialectic another time. Take care, Gary. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig and Egberto Willis, and tonight with Peter Hughes from Tech Bytes on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Next up is Coach Bill. I thought we'd get to Ted Cruz, and so far I haven't even had to mention him, so this is interesting. Coach Bill, how are you doing tonight? You're on the air.
I'm good tonight. How are you?
Good, thank you. What's up?
I was reading a blog today, primarily a liberal audience, and the subject of higher education came up. And surprising to me, a number of the commenters were dissing, you know, the importance of getting a higher education. And so I was going to pose a question to you, which is very simple. What is the value of education? And by that I mean primarily post-high school education. And is it simply and only about earning capacity? It's only about getting a job?
I think that that's a great question and a really important question. Peter, do you want to take a shot at that first?
Sure.
You don't have to.
I don't want to twist your arm.
No,
I'm just trying to kind of formulate the best way.
I'll tell you what, then. Let me take a shot at it, and then you can chime in when you've got your head together on that. Personally, I am an enormous advocate of a traditional liberal arts education. I think that the purpose of an education, first and foremost, is to help you understand the world, understand history and culture, understand nature, being able to see what's around you and be able to kind of begin to see things as the big picture. I think that in this world, we have a role for specialists, but I think generalists are also very important. And I think that everyone has a richer internal life if they have a good liberal arts education, regardless of what line of work or labor they end up in.
Yeah, well, and I think there's sort of two pieces to it to me. One is if you've ever heard of the Dunning-Kruger effect.
I have not.
Which is the Dunning-Kruger effect is that people who don't know something about a subject
make it up.
Ignorant people, there are ignorant, the ignorant people or people who are not experienced in a particular subject way overestimate their ability to accomplish whatever that task is or do that.
The equivalent of being drunk as it happens.
Thing. Yeah. They way overestimate their level of accomplishment, their level of ability to do it, and their knowledge of the subject. And then people who are very knowledgeable about subjects, you may have, you know, if you're at a university, I know I remember one professor that he was almost incomprehensible. Because he knew so much about his subject, he almost couldn't talk about his subject until people started like trying to push him and asked him very specific questions, and then suddenly this focus came out because he and so getting more education, you want to go from being a confident, ignorant person to understanding – I guess knowing what you don't know is important.
Now, don't get me wrong. I put a lot of stock in vocational and trade training. I was a lousy student. I'm not a stupid guy, but I was a lousy student. School was simply not my thing. And for some people, they may be very smart people that simply don't do well in an academic environment. And for them, they can have a rich intellectual life while still being able to make a living at a skilled trade. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, you see these people on Jeopardy all the time, taxi drivers, sanitation men. Who obviously never succeeded at school, and yet they're obviously very knowledgeable. They have a grasp of the world around them. What do you think, Bill?
Well, I think that education has intrinsic value. Period.
I think that sums it up nicely.
Better to be educated than to not be educated. I think it's a bonus, you know, if you can put your education to use in some way in terms of earning a living. But I don't think that we should, you know, value education as a society simply based on earning potential.
We don't need to train drones, we need to train citizens, which
exactly.
is why I often say that an educated electorate is a prerequisite for democracy.
Exactly. That is exactly correct.
Well, and it's part of
we live in a society where we, you know, hold the football quarterback in much higher esteem than the valedictorian. And I think we are going to continue to have problems until we can turn that around.
The United States, I think, going back to its inception, has always, in my opinion, been a profoundly anti-intellectual country.
Oh, it is. And there's numerous books on the subject. Just, you know, go to Amazon and type in anti-intellectual, and you'll see a whole list of them, and some of them are very good.
You'll see a map of the United States next to the definition.
I will throw out a comment on evolution, and then I'll let you get on to the next guy.
Okay.
We have reached a point where our future is not going to be determined by biological evolution, other than perhaps some breakthroughs in the medical field. It is going to be the evolution of spirit that determines where we end up. Because that occurs at a much more rapid rate. Biological evolution is slow.
Yes, that's true. Culture is fast. Biology is slow. I think that's a good point. Okay, thank you so much, Coach Bill. I appreciate it. I'll look forward to hearing from you again. We have some time before the next ID. So, Kyle, you're up next. Kyle, you're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
Yes.
You expected 10 more minutes on hold, right?
Yeah, it's all worth it. I do have a little battery on my phone, so I may hop off and just listen to the answer and everything.
Okay.
But I thought I'd go back to the topic of the heavy backpacks.
Okay.
Because I always had a heavy backpack in school, and my kids aren't into school yet because they're too young. But while you have a technology guest on there, I thought it'd be a good topic for the two of you to cover would be tablets and electronic textbooks and even branching off into open source technology textbooks and whatnot. but seeing that as a, not necessarily a solution, but an option. And it does get you away from the heavy backpacks and whatnot. But just thoughts on that as far as is viable, is it something that could really happen as far as mass use of tablets and electronic textbooks for public schools?
Okay. Thank you so much then. So, Peter, yeah, this is we can start this with you.
I'm big on that one. I think that that one of our problems in education in public school, you know, kindergarten to the end of high school, is we run it on the industrial model, and the future has moved on. You know, society has moved on. Most people's jobs are not industrial. The way they approach, you know, it's bizarre to me that a large number of kids at home have a tablet and they know how to use it, or they have a smartphone and they know how to use it. But then when they go to school, we're back to pencil and paper, carrying around a heavy backpack, those books.
Now, why do you think that is still?
I think in large part it's because of lack of spending on education. I think that it's easier to keep doing the industrial model, like newspapers. It's easy to produce a million newspapers, and the cost per unit is low, and that system developed far enough that it worked for a long time. It even worked up against, say, the internet to deliver newspapers for a quarter or 50 cents. And so it does have an economy of scale by doing it.
I don't know if it has an economy of scale. If you've ever priced a textbook,
they don't buy new textbooks. But in Texas, they just don't buy new textbooks.
They tear out pages. Well, they do that in Arizona, actually. They tear out pages if the books don't suit their particular ideological slant.
Physical editing.
I think what we might say is that the lack of digital school books may be due to what you might call the Lindsey Graham effect. I think it was Lindsey Graham who said he's never sent an email, or he almost never sends emails. And I think when the people who are making textbook decisions, be they the publishers who can advocate them, or whether it be the school boards who can demand them, you are still in a generation of people who are at the decision-making level who are Lindsey Grahams. They are not that comfortable with electronics. They are not that comfortable with tablets. Now, I'm a little bit more advanced than that. I got my first computer in 1985. So for an old guy, I can even do a little DOS. But I have to tell you, tablets have given me a hard time simply because I cannot seem to get the keypads to work for me. Uh-huh. It's a real problem. My sister, who's 3 years older than me, has a similar problem. And because of that, both of us lean toward BlackBerries for our phone. Kyle, what do you think?
Well, we plan on homeschooling my kids, but also I think they'd be great. I think that they are viable. I think there's a lot of control issues as far as handing kids such an expensive item, but with Raspberries and so many cheap computer processing options out there now, tablets are only going to get cheaper and cheaper. I think it would be a great way for people to move, but I think you're right as far as the people in charge of making the decisions aren't the people using it, aren't the people benefiting from it, and aren't the people familiar with the technology or the options available.
Do you know that Barack Obama is the first president to have a laptop in the Oval Office?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it is delayed.
Literally unbelievable.
The thing to me, looking at it and, you know, from a very pragmatic point of view, though, is – you look at American business, and the Lindsey Graham, he can tell you all day long about what's good for American business. And one of the
but
things
doesn't
that,
send email.
One of the things that's very odd to me, yeah, and that gets to my point. One of the things that's very odd to me is technology gives you productivity gains. So we're trying to get more out of our schools, more education to the kids, more from the teachers.
Imagine how easy it is to update a science textbook if it's digital and you just download it to the school database.
Or to have the test be graded in real time, or have an exercise where the child makes choices, and when they get it wrong, instead of it just being up or down, then it takes them down a path to understand what happened.
An educational flowchart. On the other hand, then you get kids that hack it the way, like when when Sarah Palin talked about Paul Revere jingling his bells and talking about the Redcoats and the Second Amendment, and you actually had people going to Wikipedia and trying to change the page – to make it agree with Sarah Palin. So now take that same thing to a digital school, and it's like you get some kids. Imagine Bart Simpson having access to digital textbooks if he was a hacker. That's a scary scenario.
Although I think, you know, it ties in with the other caller about higher education.
I think Sarah Palin
doesn't appear to have benefited from a higher education.
She doesn't appear to have benefited from medium education.
She went to college.
She had a,
but she
several times.
Wasn't paying attention.
Well, and people who are by any measure, any traditional measure, have this same problem, or by it, who would be successful, went to an Ivy League school like Ted Cruz. To get him into the show.
Actually, Alan Dershowitz, his professor at Harvard, said that he was scary smart.
But the thing is that they don't do is, you know, Sarah Palin's understanding of history sounds very much about a, say, middle school level of history.
No, I think you're insulting middle school students.
So she can twist it and turn it into whatever it is she wants for her argument. And she has a large number of people who follow who
equally ignorant
didn't go to school to understand that. You know, one of the things anybody who's had a college history class that remembers it, if they showed up all the time and read the book and listened to the professor, the thing that happens first is the shock of hearing the true history of all the stuff that you get the glossed over, oh, yeah, there was a tea party and the rebels and they won.
The rah-rah
history.
It's
almost like Star Wars. It's a three-hour deal and the empire's gone kind of thing. And then America had the Constitution and everybody was happy and we're the best country in the world. That's, you know, there you can make arguments about that stuff. But there's also places where there's blemishes and the people who want to leave those out, if you haven't studied your history, you don't realize they're there. It's easy to skip over them or ignore them or forget about them.
I've talked many times about the burning of Washington by the British and how American kids are not taught that the British didn't just up and decide to burn Washington.
Right.
It was retaliation for the Americans burning York, the capital of Canada. But you don't hear about that side of it so much. Even when you do the White House tour and they show you bricks of the old Capitol that are smoke-stained, and they don't tell you, oh, and we had burned York first. I'm going to let you go, Kyle. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, more recent history.
Let me do a quick ID. You're listening to Thinkwing Radio with Mike Koenig and Egberto Willis and my guest, Peter Hughes from Technology Bytes. This is 90.1 FM in Houston. Egberto.
One quick thing about the school books. One of the big reasons that we probably will never go to the tablets and that great efficiency is because of the lobby from the textbook makers. It's amazing how political all these types of things
are. Let me tell
you
how you solve that. They end up with proprietary software for their textbooks, and they develop a textbook standard, and then the publishers sell you the tablet to download their textbooks, and problem is solved from a capitalistic standpoint. I want to say this one thing, and I've mentioned it on the air before. I have less than 2 years of college. If the economics of college when I went were the same as they are today, I would never have gone to college, because I went to college totally like crossing my fingers, Hail Mary. It was the thing to do, and I would have been amazed if I had graduated, frankly, because I was such a lousy student. But I feel like the time that I spent in college for me was irreplaceable. I feel like what I picked up in those under 2 years in college formed literally the intellectual foundation for me for my entire life. And I think I would have been an incomplete person without it.
I wonder, and this is where I think we'll have to disagree. I watch how you operate, and, you know, and the person that I learned the most in my life as a software engineer was a guy who barely finished high school. And the people who took him up at the engineering firm, looked at him because of his intellect. There are a lot of people out there. Some people need the structure of college. Some don't.
Don't thrive.
Right. And so I'm never the elitist that believe that a path to success or a path to knowledge it's college. For most of us, it is.
For many of us.
Or
for
maybe I should say
maybe what we need is something like a Montessori college. No, I mean, you laugh.
I don't know, Mike. You'd always come up with
Now, wait a second. Montessori schools, the whole premise behind them, as I understand it, is you let children follow their strengths, follow their curiosity, and learn of their own free will. If you had a less structured college environment for maybe people like me who don't thrive in a highly structured academic environment, maybe something like a Montessori college is something we should sort of experiment with.
That may be true. I wanted my daughter to go to college, and I think specifically because my daughter isn't as focused. Now, I went to college, but I didn't have to because I'm very focused at doing the things that I want to do, and in fact, I'm doing nothing that I went to college for.
And that's
right
true
now.
Of most college graduates.
Yeah, I guess the thing to me in the traditional liberal arts education and all of that is that it teaches you to think and it teaches you to question what you know, because the worst thing is that kind of unshakable certainty of somebody who's wrong.
It's also sort of a hothouse of ideas and different people from different backgrounds, and it gives you a skeletal structure on which to further build your knowledge.
Well, there's experiences that you should have in your life.
Yes.
You know, everybody would agree there's sort of the you know, that there you could come up with a list of experiences, good and bad, that people should have in their lives. You know, at some time in your life, you should be in love and feel what that is like.
Yeah, but
that,
losing
that,
it
that
sucks.
Rush and all that. But you learn something. You learn something from losing it too, though.
Yeah, it sucks.
And one of the things that I think is that should be on more people's lists. It's not pleasant. Is that you should have an unshakable belief in something and then confront somebody who knows more and can show you that you were incorrect, that what you thought about the world was not accurate, and that they can show you what the truth is and help you understand it so that you can get loose from that your ego is that keeping it my own facts is not as important as knowing truth.
Learn it, you know, and it's a hard tenet to learn. Something that I learned in my old age is that being wrong or making mistakes, they're not fatal. They're
usually
actually, you know what I mean. I'm talking about in the knowledge space. It's not fatal. It's actually uplifting when, for both sides of the argument, when somebody says, I've just been enlightened, you know? It's amazing.
When I was a window covering installer, I drove a lot. I think in the 20 years I was an installer, I put on something like 350,000 miles around Southeast Texas. I mean, we're talking a lot. And on days that were slow, when I had free time, when I found a road that I had not been down before, I would take it. It's like, I got plenty of time to get to the next job. They're not going to be home for another hour. Maybe this is a shortcut. Maybe this is a long cut. Maybe it's a dead end. Let's find out. And I learned a lot of the road that way. Okay, I'm sorry. I got callers, and I'm always complaining, I have open lines, and now I have callers, so I can't ignore them. Ed, you're on the air. By the way, I think I skipped an ID, so let me just do a quick one. You're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston with Mike Honig, Egberto Willis, and Peter Hughes. Go ahead, Ed.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm on education for 9 years here, but I've been in 20 years in technology, so I need I know a little bit of both, and I've been also very political. So what I found out by now is actually education is not to get an education, actually. It's a way to it's another method of control. The 1% that is the one that have all the money, they're the ones that want to keep the things the way they are. So they don't give a damn about the 99% of us. They want to control us, so they want obedient, not well-educated, non-political, dumb people. So they control it. So when they have their own kids in the position of control, they keep them with the control. So that's what they don't want, like you mentioned, the Montessori system of education, because that isn't something against them, because that teaches freedom, way to follow your own inspiration, and give capacities to every way of learning to really blossom. So there will be smarter people that know what they want, when they want it, and how to get it. And that is scare the hell of everybody upstairs.
You know what I mean? I agree with large parts of what you say.
10,000 years long. Since we start building pyramids and since the Mesopotamic creation of civilization, always the 1% that get in touch with the power, the military power, the knowledge, and the money, they have always controlled everything. It has changed from hand to hand to different countries, but it happened the same in the Roman Empire, in the Greek Empire, in the England, Anglo-Saxon Empire, France Empire, and now USA Empire.
Well, I would argue that while sociopaths are a very small percentage of the population, clinically diagnosable sociopaths, I think that much like evolution, they tend to selectively succeed as you go higher and higher in the hierarchies of corporations and governments because they are ruthless and
they are amoral.
They end up
10,000 people without any chains, or they can do usually like Republicans, they only get control of both houses, and the first thing built there is the more important than everything else is the pipeline for the Koch brothers. I mean, are you nuts? Is the first thing in your agenda instead of helping veterans that came here with a lot of traumas from the country, that a lot of people are losing their food because they don't have and nothing to feed them? Is your first agenda?
Well, I
that
think
they
this,
are nuts.
I think this goes back to Peter's reference to the movie Idiocracy.
That's right.
Which, by the way, is playing on cable currently.
Oh, really?
So you can look it up if you want to watch Idiocracy.
I already watched it. And also Corporation. That actually is one of the heavy problems. The heavy problem is the corporation right now is a no persona that is not people. You cannot jail them, but they have the power to put all the money they want in the politicians. So actually, they are all labeled with tax on prices. So all the ones in power from the president and below, they are for hire.
Well, we've created a system that incentivizes that. I think we're currently in a culture that looks a little bit like a mashup of Idiocracy and Rollerball.
Yes. But the thing is, they lose a little thing when they create internet, because actually that was created in the 60s by the government.
By the military. It's a DARPA project.
By the military trying to find a way, okay, what happened if Russia sends the missiles to destroy our concentrated information centers in the United States? What we do? Oh, let's put a software, the DCIP software, so to distribute the knowledge or the information in different computers. And then say, oh, but if we open it, there's actually there was not going to control it. Any good hacker can get into any computer whenever they want. So they give it to Stafford, and they just start playing with that, and then we have the Pandora box, and they cannot have how to close it.
I think at its best, the internet is the biggest step in the dissemination of human knowledge since printing.
I do agree. It's the new Gutenberg revolution.
Yes.
This is the kind of revolution that we have in the Enlightenment.
Yeah,
there's nothing close to that before that.
It's literally a new age. Thanks so much for calling, Ed. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right. You're listening to ThinkWing Radio with Mike Honig, Egberto Willis, and my guest today, Peter Hughes from Technology Bytes. It's 90.1 FM in Houston, KPFT. And Nick is next up. Nick, you're on the air. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I just wanted to make a couple comments on the value of education. I think one of the most important things that education gives you would be they teach you how to critically think. Now, that's not to say that you always apply critical thinking everywhere, because I know there are a lot of highly educated people that may not understand something, but they think they do, and then they end up with that unshakable surety that I'm intelligent, therefore I must understand every facet of the world. And that type of arrogance breeds what we have now, where, oh, the homeless are just homeless because they're lazy. Or, oh, you know, unemployment insurance, that we don't need that. That's not right. Or, you know, if the government runs out of money, you know, then it's like a guy having money in his pocket. If he takes the money out of his pocket and gives it to somebody else, then he has no more money in his pocket. It's like, well, first off, you understand that your simple, narrow view is not actually representative of what you're trying to explain. You're using, like, you know, backyard economics to explain, like, how a sovereign currency works. You know, it's not the same thing. And I just think that if you critically think, you can't come up with those. But there are some highly educated people that will fall into that.
I think that what I have increasingly come to believe about conservatives, you know, you hear liberals talk about programs. You hear conservatives talk about principles. I really believe that the conservative perspective doesn't really care, and I said this last week, doesn't care about outcomes. They care about principles. So in principle, in theory, these things should be this way. It almost doesn't matter if they work.
Actually, I would say that I think it doesn't matter if it works, because I name, you know, there's some, this opens such a big door. Look at what is the conservative solution to every problem that the United States has had since 1980 to the present.
Tax cuts.
Tax cuts.
Less regulation.
Less regulation.
Less regulation. And cut spending on, you know, social programs.
And all the statistics say it doesn't work and it doesn't help much.
Right. And plus, they apply it to so many different problems that even if you're crazy, you wouldn't say these are, can't be the same answers every time you have a problem. Income inequality.
Tax cuts.
You have Paul Ryan, and what was his answer?
Tax cuts.
Tax cuts, reduce regulation to free up American business, and cut the social safety net. Some of it is conservatives, I think, are
do people
with
a
the
favor
outcome.
By ending Social Security, ending unemployment, ending Medicare, so that these people are forced to get up on their hind legs and go out and work.
But the thing I would say is behind that, though, the farther than that is, I want to keep more of my money, and so I don't want to pay for any of those things, so
it's rationalizing greed.
Yes,
rationalized greed
as a being a good, when really all it is its selfishness.
Which goes back to Ed's comment and others that workers now people are trained as workers. They're not trained as functioning members of a democratic society. They're trained to be workers, essentially drones in a sense.
Gary just called back.
That's partially the school's fault. The university plays a big role, and instead of placing a lot of emphasis on a liberal arts education or critical thinking or being able to understand the world or being able to just be able to disseminate through BS.
But
you know,
why?
Logical thought process.
But why do the schools
do, like,
do that? Because that's the demand that is placed on them by the recruiters that want to hire out of the schools.
Well,
so they don't
the
want generalists,
the,
they
the
want
money,
specialists.
The
because
money that's getting endowed to the schools, they only part of it is they don't want the people who ask the difficult questions. They want more guys who will produce.
They don't want functioning citizens. They want more efficient workers.
Yes.
I will honestly say that in the end, most companies do want people that can critically think. It's just that the power structures don't want individuals to critically think.
They don't think that far ahead.
Yeah. I want to say, Gary, first of all, called back,
okay.
And he wanted to give kudos to Nick for his commentary. Okay, so he really likes what Nick is saying. Now, secondly, I want to ask one thing. I hope everybody has read the Powell Manifesto, because if you want to know exactly why our educational system are teaching the things that they're teaching and how they are no longer teaching critical thinking but indoctrinative-type thinking, the Powell Letter by Lewis Powell is probative.
I also want to point out, sort of obliquely relevant to what we're talking about, have you noticed how conservatives talk about Robin Hood liberals? Robin Hood liberals. And have they forgotten that Robin Hood was supposed to be the good guy? So that means that they're Sheriff of Nottingham conservatives? I kind of like that. Why don't we start talking about the Sheriff of Nottingham conservatives?
Because we don't know how to be that in-your-face evil.
I can be in your face a little.
It's.
I am sometimes, unfortunately, disruptively and stupidly in your face. So.
But what's so funny is it's really a lesson in projection, because if you look at their policies, what their policies actually do is huge rent-seeking in the terms of the rich taking from everybody else and concentrating it in their hands.
They are the
so
sheriffs.
They're projecting themselves on everyone else.
I think that's true, actually.
And it's been happening, you know, they're demonstrating it in Kansas. They're demonstrating it in Wisconsin, where they are doing, you know, before it was, well, the economy hasn't boomed from all the conservative ideas because we didn't do them enough. And now we have states where they are going whole hog. And the thing about it is the results are what you would expect if you really look at it and think about it. Their economies are in the tank. Money is funneling up to the rich. Services aren't going to people who need them. And it's one of the things that bothers me with conservatism is what I call false common sense. Which is
the biggest example of the state would definitely be Kansas. You look at Kansas. Kansas is one of the worst.
It's an ideological failure. Nick, I'm going to let you go because I've got Michael, who's been online for 23 minutes now, and I've actually got a couple of callers who came in and gave up. So thank you very much for calling. And now, Michael, you're on the air. You are a very persistent fellow.
Hey, good day. This is my first time listening to y'all. I'm glad I came across y'all on the radio.
I appreciate you hanging on so long.
Absolutely. I like to see if I can have an opportunity to prove my point and see where it goes from there. We're sitting there talking about I've heard how y'all talk about evolution and society and people. And to be an evolutionist is that we came from nothing, for nothing, from nothing, by accident. Okay? And then when we go over to the societal side, talking about education and so on and so forth and higher education. Higher education is only relevant because our society tells us so. I work in a refinery, and most of the people I work with make between $75,000 or $125,000 and don't have an education. But they're able to do something that most people can't because they're mechanically inclined.
Right.
And not everybody is mechanically inclined. And it's what our society has taught us. My father-in-law, I'm going to tell you a true story, I hope you believe me. My father-in-law's education is 8th grade, and he's an operations manager because he's very mechanically inclined, and he makes $135,000 a year. Okay? Society, most people that aren't listening, would sit there and say he has an 8th grade education, therefore he is not an asset.
First of all, I think it's gotten increasingly difficult for that kind of thing to happen. Because you are shut out of a job even to apply unless you have a certain required level of education. Egberto, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, because I love what he is saying. I went out there with the unions last week, and I was marching with them and talking to them, and it was amazing because what he just said is a lot of the things that they had to tell me. They were telling me, look, we can't say that we are what we are making, that we're striking because of what we're making, because the average engineer or what they make a lot more than engineers. They make a lot more than a lot of these other people. And they are fearful that when they are looking for what's best for their union, that they cannot tell America that they're well paid, because America has become this elitist group that believe you need an education to deserve salary. So one of the things that we spoke about is, no, you have to put that out there and say, no, you deserve what you deserve because you're doing something that makes, you know.
Well, you can look at an athlete. Athletes are not necessarily well-educated. They're not necessarily particularly smart, and they can be multi-millionaires.
They're not educated, but they have something that only 1%.
No, they are, sir. They are, and that is the thing that I'd like to get in the notion of people. They are educated because you're not educated in a particular scholarly field means that you're not educated.
Well, first of all, we're talking about formal education. 8th grade formal education. I don't care how smart a person is. I mean, I draw a very, very careful distinction between native intelligence and ignorance. Someone can be ignorant without being stupid.
Right.
I use the word ignorant quite a bit, but I very rarely use the word stupid. So I think that there's a really critical distinction there. So when you talk about a guy with an 8th grade education who's making $175,000 a year as a project manager, that's a guy who obviously isn't stupid, but he may be in many areas ignorant simply because he wasn't given the opportunity to get the foundation.
And that is where I differ. My differ from that is that most of the knowledge that I have today, and as much as I went to college, I get because I independently went and learned it on my own.
But first of all, that's not true of many people. They're not native learners. And secondly, there are many people who simply end up very focused on the thing that they do and don't have a picture of the wider world to draw upon.
And hey, Michael, can I say two things
real
quick? And then I'll let you go. I know you got
excellent.
Other callers.
Yeah, because we got about 2 minutes. I'll give it to you.
Absolutely. I'm going
to
make it real quick. my father-in-law dropped out of high school because his dad died and his mother had a mental breakdown, so he had to take care of his brother. And y'all heard about, you know, the different things of society that are causing problems. I just came from California where they were striking, and I worked 6 weeks and I had $8,000 in taxes taken out. My government's telling me that they need that money more than I can. But this is my first time listening to y'all. I love y'all. Y'all are great. Keep it up.
Well, have thank you. I appreciate that,
take
Michael.
Care. Bye-bye.
You know, if you work 6 weeks and have $8,000 taken out in taxes, I wonder what the net was.
What I want to see is the first...
Considering we're at the lowest tax rates we've had in the last 50 or 60 years.
If you really want low tax rates, I want to see the first hardcore conservative who quit working, because their idea is that it's just so easy to sit back and take from the government, just take the money and sit around. Where are, if that's the market force, if that's the obvious answer, where are all the conservatives who are smart about money, who have quit their jobs or gotten themselves fired so they can have this easy life that they claim the poor are having when they're demonizing them? There's only a couple minutes left, but one thing on just that I would love to just mention that hasn't come up so far, but one of the things that's most disturbing to me to watch is the game, which is when conservatives know the outcome and they play the game, and they're doing it. In Texas, they didn't do it so much before, but they're doing it right now, is in the Senate of Texas, they came up with, the Republican comptroller came up with this glowing estimate of how much money is going to come into the state coffers from taxes, property taxes, etc. So they have to calculate that number because the budget is built on
And they
that.
Only meet every 2 years,
so
which makes it more challenging.
So they came up with this sun shines every day, downhill, wind at your back number, and then that is used to justify a huge tax cut that, of course, is going to be heavily weighted to the rich because they, of course, pay more taxes. What's going to happen? I'll say it now. I'll put it out there. Because conservatives, the thing is, they know it, but they lie about it and then pretend it's a surprise nobody could have expected. What's going to happen is we're going to cut the taxes. We're not going to make the revenue. And the solution is going to be, oh, well, we don't have enough money. We got to cut. We don't put the tax cuts back. We just take the money out of the schools again and out of our society.
Okay, I'm just going to say one thing really quick. If tax cuts really do breed economic growth, and if the more you cut taxes, the better your economic growth, then if you cut taxes to zero, economic growth ought to be infinite. Okay, thank you for listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig, Egberto Willis, my special guest Peter Hughes, and I just want to mention that if you think you want a revolution, remember, voting is the revolution. Talk to you next week.
On May 7th, proposed bylaws amendments will be taken up for acceptance or rejection by the Pacifica National Board. If any are approved by the PNB, local station delegates' assemblies will have until no later than July 6th to take them up for acceptance or rejection. You can view an amendment concerning in-person meetings and an amendment to reduce the size of the Pacifica National Board, the two items up for review, at pacifica.org. You are welcome to share comments with the National Board at pnb@pacifica.org. KPFT, Houston.
We've all played that game. What's the CD that you'd take with you to a desert island if you only had one choice? Maybe it would be something by... Or maybe it would be a disc from...
Mr. DJ, can't you please play a real country song?
Well, let's play that game now, but with a twist. What radio station would you take to a desert island if you only had one choice? There's only one answer to that question. It's KPFT, of course. We bring you great music, news, and information each day. You depend on us to keep you up to date. And radio that's worth listening to is radio that's worth supporting. 90% of our funding comes from people just like you. Without you, KPFT would be gone. So visit our website today, kpft.org, to become a member. You are listening to Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
The following program may contain language or imagery that may be offensive to some listeners. Discretion is advised. The Federal Communications Commission permits the broadcast of some profanity during hours deemed to be safe harbor, when children are less likely to be listening. KPFT upholds a stricter policy, permitting the broadcast